Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
It is my great privilege to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Harvey Wasserman. Harvey Wasserman is a lifelong activist and one of the best of them. He teaches history and cultural and ethnic diversity at two colleges in Central Ohio. He works to shut down nuclear power and create Solartopia. You should go to his website at solartopia.org as well as freepress.org. Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis covered the presidential election theft in Ohio in 2004 and have been warning about the unsecure U.S. election system in 2016. And we'll talk about some of the articles Harvey's been co-authoring on that topic. Harvey Wasserman, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
David, it's great to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you on here. You have an article you wrote with Bob Fitrakis and Mimi Kennedy with the title, Can Bernie Win a Strip and Flip Selection? Not election, but selection. Let's talk about those elements. What's the stripping and what's the flipping?
Okay, so we have a history, David, in this country of divide and conquer between the races, of course. The way that the Republican Party has taken over the government is to keep blacks and whites at each other's throats. And the way they win elections, and actually Richard Nixon's answer to the civil rights movement, has been to strip as many African Americans and now Hispanics as possible from the voter rolls so that they can't vote. If we look at the demographics, for example, of the Deep South, from South Carolina across Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana, you have states that are pretty much 40% African-American and Hispanic. So the tactic is to strip as many of these people off the voter rolls as possible. Now, Greg Tallis has done some great reporting, starting in Florida 2000, actually, where he showed that Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida at the time, stripped about 90,000 African Americans and Hispanics off the voter rolls in an election that his brother allegedly won. We don't think he did really, by less than 600 votes. So it's going on today. Greg has authored a new piece showing that upwards of 700,000, that's 700,000 voters, are being stripped from the rolls in Ohio, where between 5 and 6 million people vote. So it's more than 10% of the vote, and it's almost exclusively African Americans and Hispanics who are being stripped off the voter rolls. They do this by computer program. In Florida 2000, they claimed that all these people were ex-felons. It turned out not one of them was. This year, what they're doing is going after duplicate names and using common names, which are like Jackson, Johnson, Smith, Jones, that are often, there's a higher percentage of black people who have common names. And by a substantial margin, actually, and people should look at Greg Palast's website if they're interested in the details. And so, again, the strategy is to prevent voting while black and voting while Hispanic and just tip the balance up front against the Democratic Party. Not that the Democratic Party is worth fighting for, but in this case, you'll have a clear unbalancing of the election. And, of course, it has implications should we ever get a major third-party campaign committed to actual social change. The skins will be greased to completely rig the outcome, first of all, by stripping likely progressive voters, and then we can talk about the flipping aspect of it as well.
Is there, in terms of just still on the topic of stripping voters of the right to vote, is there a problem with young voters as well as with African-American and Latino voters? I mean, I recall problems with young voters being able to vote in Ohio in 2004. I heard stories from this year in Iowa about polling places being placed far from campuses and reports from New Hampshire of students being turned away who thought they were going to be allowed to register on the same day as voting. Is all of that a question of incompetence, or is there some coordinated scheme? Because it seems that both in the Democratic primary and probably in the general election, there is a decided favorability for one side over the other among the young potential voters.
Yeah, especially college students are targeted challenged on their right to vote based on where they live as opposed to where they're going to school. We saw this in Ohio also. There's an unbalance in at Kenyon College in 2004. They shortchanged the polling place at Kenyon College and gave them two machines, one of which rapidly broke down, whereas at a fundamentalist college 5 minutes away, you know, they had plenty of machines. And so you could vote at the fundamentalist college in 5 minutes, and it took up to 8 hours at Kenyon College. Now, the kids turned it into a party. But we know that this is it also happened at Oberlin College in northern Ohio. And so the powers that be are able to target certain districts based in part on the nature of the college and the idea that young people will be voting there. And kids on campus are usually challenged as to where they're really living. If they want to vote on campus, they're often disqualified because they have different home addresses and vice versa. So this is something that's to be watched for. And, of course, now, David, with this attempt, really this push to get demand photo ID, that discriminates a lot against elderly people who don't have driver's license a lot of time, don't have any photo ID, and it amounts to a poll tax where they're being required to go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau or some other government agency and pay for a photo ID, and getting there is often a challenge. And so they're stripping it at all ends of the book here, getting rid of young people who tend to vote left, getting rid of elderly people who are certainly committed to Social Security and Medicare, and then African Americans and Hispanics. And, you know, this has become both an art and a science, and they know how to do it. They've been doing it at least since 2000, the stripping part of election theft. And, you know, we're seeing it underway now, as Greg Tallis has reported. So this is a very serious challenge to what's left of our democracy, if you can still call it that.
Yeah, and they have hit us with that photo ID requirement here in Virginia as well, which has been considered a swing state in recent elections. The stripping part seems like a transparent, undisputable, empirically observable injustice, that there ought to be major organizations and constituencies willing to work to fix, and I think to some extent there are. The flipping seems to be a little more controversial and less reported in the corporate media. Explain to listeners what flipping means.
Well, if you have not sufficiently purged the voter rolls to win an election, and you have control of the Secretary of State's office, as well as the governorship, which is true in six key swing states now, Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, and Arizona, all have Republican governors and Republican secretaries of state. And, of course, the vast bulk of the votes are being cast and counted electronically. And so if you're a governor sitting with your Secretary of State at midnight on election night after the ballots have been cast, and you notice that you're losing, you can just call in the IT person and flip the whole election in a matter of about 60 seconds. All these machines are hackable. Most of the electronic voting machines in the country are around 10 years old. I mean, you and I are not operating iPhones or even laptops or desktops that are anywhere near 10 years old. But these things are very easily hackable. It's been shown repeatedly that these electronic voting machines can be hacked. You can even hack one from a car on the street next to a precinct with Wi-Fi, if you really know what you're doing, and you may not even have to know that much. But we saw this, David, in 2000 in Florida. There was a switch. Just as the networks were about to call the election for Al Gore, there was a switch of about 16,000 votes in Volusia County, and it was done electronically. And John Ellis, a Bush cousin, who was a Fox commentator, jumped up and down and said, no, Gore's not winning. Look at this shift in Florida. And they all stopped calling the election for Gore and then, you know, started playing games with the vote count, and suddenly Bush emerged as the winner. And, of course, Gore has never said anything about this. But it's very well documented. Bev Harris did it with black box voting, Greg, in 2000. And then in 2004, at 12:20 at night, we got a screenshot of the CNN outcome, predicted outcome of the election. And there were 11 swing states, 9 of which were in the Kerry camp. They were blue states by then. Florida and Colorado showed for Bush. But the other states, Minnesota, Ohio, Nevada, Arizona, a few others, Wisconsin, showed in the blue column for Kerry, and that clearly gave him the election by a very substantial margin in the Electoral College. That was at 12:20 at night. At 2 in the morning, an hour and a half later, the whole picture changed. And Ohio, among others, had complained of glitches in the vote count. Always watch for glitches in the vote count after the ballots or as the ballots are being counted and cast. And the Secretary of State of Ohio, who was having to be co-chair of the committee to reelect Bush Cheney, stopped the flow of vote count information. In other words, the votes were frozen as they were at 12:20 at night. And then at 2 in the morning, when the flow of vote counts resumed, Kerry's 4.2% lead had turned into a 2.5% victory for George W. Bush. It was a swing of more than 200,000 votes, about 6.7%. And every statistician who's looked at it has called it a virtual statistical impossibility. And not only did it happen in Ohio, it happened in 8 of the 9 other states that had been in the Kerry camp. Now, Wisconsin held firm, and we believe because they had a Doug LaFollette was the Secretary of State. But all the votes, all the shift in the vote count in that night, on election night in 2004, went to from Kerry to Bush. In 10 of the 11 swing states, Kerry lost votes to Bush. And in 4 of them, it switched the vote from Kerry to Bush, and then thus the election. And that was Ohio, Iowa, Nevada, and New Mexico. And those 4 states gave Bush a second term. And it's a virtual statistical impossibility on many fronts. First of all, the size of the swing. Then the reality that 10 of the 11 states all swung in Bush's direction. We looked at the 50 states in 2004. We found one or two where there were some shifts from Kerry to Bush. From Bush to Kerry. But the rest of it all went to Bush. And it's statistically impossible unless you're in the process of stealing an election. Yeah. Now, we later found out that the vote count in Ohio was contracted to a Bush family-related firm and headed by a guy named Michael Connell, who was a devotee of the Bush family. And they had a no-bid contract given to them by J. Kenneth Blackwell, who was the Secretary of State of Ohio, and also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign. And Michael Connell was with the Bush family all the way back to Bush 1, George H.W. Bush. And the vote count came back under his supervision to Blackwell with a massive shift from Kerry to Bush. And that's how Bush carried Ohio. And it all happened between 12:20 and 2 a.m. in the morning of election night in 2004. We told the Bush, the Kerry campaign, we were in touch with them, and we told them two things. We said, first of all, this shift is not possible unless the election is being stolen. And second of all, Bush was leading by about 120-some thousand votes, and 250,000 votes had yet to be counted, just flat out, you know, out there. And the Kerry campaign responded by conceding at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, leaving essentially 250,000 votes uncounted in Ohio, which has still never been counted. And so this flip part of the election now can be done in about 60 seconds, is what it would take. You can have people campaigning, you know, with millions of dollars spent and hundreds of appearances and tens of thousands of people coming out to the events and all the media yapping and all that stuff, and the whole thing can come down to 60 seconds in front of an IT person who knows how to flip the electronic vote count. That's the reality of the 2016 election.
We're speaking with Harvey Wasserman, who has closely studied election fraud in the United States. It does seem clear, Harvey, that in a number of different ways, the 2000 presidential election was stolen, including after all of the stripping and the flipping. If the votes had simply been recounted and not stopped by the Supreme Court, Al Gore would have won no matter which way they were counted in Florida. And
David, as you know, that's one of the most astonishing Supreme Court decisions in all of American history.
Yes, it is.
They took the 14th Amendment and said that, and I guess the 5th to a certain extent, and said that Bush would, to continue with the recount, would have deprived Bush of due process. How you come to that conclusion is.
They didn't even come to that conclusion. They said, we are stipulating this in this one case, and it shall not set a precedent or any logical argument for any future case. Openly hypocritical in their ruling. But I think that that then you jump to the year 2004, and, you know, according to Mark Crispin Miller, Kerry admitted to him that he agreed that it had been stolen, but he wasn't going to say it publicly and has never repeated it. Whether that was true or not, many observers understood the arguments that you and Bob Fitrakis and others made very clearly, and viewed Al Gore and John Kerry as people who were willing to knowingly surrender and have elections stolen, which is why I think there was a great deal of passion immediately upon any hint of shenanigans in Iowa and New Hampshire this year, and a demand to know, would Bernie Sanders be the kind of guy who would go through all of this years-long hell of election campaigning and then throw it all away, or would he stand up and fight for something?
I've heard descriptions of people who were at the Iowa caucuses that indicate to me there was just a circus. And, you know, there has been a discussion of 6 key coin flips, all of which Hillary won. We don't see much evidence of a flipping going on in New Hampshire this time, this week. People get despair over this. You know, there's the line from Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men, you know, truth, you can't handle the truth. Well, people seem unable to handle this reality that the whole election process, all these months and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars and countless hours of bloviating on the TV set, it's all a charade. It all comes down to 60 seconds on election night with an IT person flipping the vote count. 80% of the votes this year will be cast and counted on electronic machines.
I think if you're willing to look at it carefully and you look at numerous cases, it becomes obvious. I mean, there are elections like Don Siegelman's, the governor of Alabama, where he had won, and then the Republicans in one polling place waited for all the Democrats to leave and then recounted the vote, and suddenly he lost, and the Supreme Court sided with them but forbid any further recount to verify it. I mean, it's blatant that this sort of thing goes on. But the counter argument that people will make sometimes is, well, then why are there elections that everyone predicts will be stolen and aren't? Why was Barack Obama, you know, horrible president as he was going to be, but a Democrat, permitted to win against the Republicans when all
well, because
of these...
he won by too big a margin.
Right,
and they were watching. By the way, they were definitely watching.
Who is they, and what were they watching?
Well, the Democrats were watching the vote count, and but I've seen estimates of Barack Obama's true margin of victory, well over 10 million votes, even though he was officially credited with about 7 million margin. And in Ohio, they did, the Republican machine in 2012 did attempt to tinker with the machines of putting in a patch, which Bob actually went to court and prevented, that could have flipped Ohio. It wouldn't have been enough. In 2008 and 2012, Obama won in too many states and by too big a margin.
Yeah.
And that's what we always hear from the Democrats now. When we talk to Democrats and their supporters, we say, you know, you got to deal with it. And they say, no, don't talk about it, because what we have to do is win by 10 million votes, and then it'll be okay. They accuse us of depressing the turnout. You know, it's insane.
Depressing the turnout by trying to create a verifiable system where even if it's a narrow victory, it's still a victory? That depresses the turnout?
That's right. We're supposed to give the Republicans kind of a handicap of 6 or 7 million votes.
Yeah. I don't know why you can't do both, why you can't pursue a massive victory by tens of millions of votes and try to create a verifiable system. And you guys have laid out a plan in one of your articles that you call the Ohio Plan, with several elements of what it would take to have a trustworthy election system. Can you briefly spell out what you have in mind?
Yes, David. First of all, universal automatic voter registration. That means anybody who turns 18, when you turn 18, you are automatically registered to vote. You can get forms at the Motor Vehicle Bureau, at your high school, college, post office, wherever you want. You get you're automatically, if you're 18, you register. And then when you show up to vote, there's no photo ID required. Photo ID is just a poll tax. You know, there are plenty of young people and plenty of elderly people who don't have photo ID, or poor people, homeless people. And it costs money to get a photo ID. This was abolished in the 24th Amendment in 1964. The Supreme Court has yet to rule on this, by the way. But, you know, the lower courts have actually thrown out photo ID requirements in general.
Yeah.
But we don't have a definitive ruling yet. And and it's clearly discriminatory against African Americans and poor people, young and old. And in fact, Alabama, I believe it was, one of the states in the South, surreptitiously withdrew their motor vehicle places from African American communities, making it harder to get photo ID.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there could not hardly be a connection, but you know, the reality is that this is going on. Then we want a 4-day weekend, national holiday for voting, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, because to have it on a Tuesday is discriminatory against voting working people. I mean, you have to get off work to go vote. That shouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
So Saturday is for people who go to church on Sunday. Sunday is for people who go to synagogue on Saturday. And then Monday and Tuesday, everybody's off, and you go vote. And then, you know, at the close of the polling station on Tuesday, you start the vote count. And it has to be 100% hand-counted paper ballots. I want the ballots printed on recycled or hemp paper, and they have to be maintained for 2 years after the election.
And counted at each polling place?
Yes, counted at each polling place with the results posted at the polling place. Now, many, so that you can do a recount if you want to, by having people go to each and every polling place and take a picture of the posted results and then double-check that way. That could be done.
Yeah,
and it's generally required by law to post the results at a polling station, but we see that some of these places have fallen down on this for obvious reasons, and that you go there and there's nothing posted.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, we keep the ballots for 2 years and smoke the hemp ones, and then we're done.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, counting the ballots publicly at each polling place and recording the totals from each polling place makes it very difficult, if not impossible, to do another favorite reform of some progressives, which would be instant runoff voting. And, of course, if I had to choose between those two particular reforms, I want the publicly verifiably counted paper ballots at each polling place. I want to know who voted for whom. Otherwise, the other reform doesn't work either. But the two are in conflict, are they not?
Well, yes, and they also have a conflict of paper ballots with people who are handicapped, visually impaired. They need electronic machines to vote on, and we would have to have some accommodation for that. That's the first thing we hear when we talk about abolishing electronic voting machines is, oh, you're discriminating against the visually impaired. Well, you know, we have a country that's democratically impaired. So you have to find a middle ground there. Nothing's ever 100%. We want to pay the students we want the country's students, to high school and college students, to get the days off and to be paid $15 an hour minimum wage to run the polling stations and then do the vote count. Of course, I immediately got an email on that one from an elderly person who depends on the income from working the polling stations. But, you know... So we'll have to sort that one out, too. But that's what we want. It would be a great civics lesson for the students of the country to run the polling stations and count the ballots.
Old people have been screwing this system up. A couple of states, if I remember right, first Oregon and then California, have taken steps toward automatic voter registration. We set up an email at rootsaction.org where you could email your state legislators in every other state saying, you know, do this too. But I discovered that in a majority of states, when you go get a driver's license, if you're 18 or over and male, you're automatically registered for the military. You know, so the technology exists. It's just a question of priorities.
Right. And then, you know, we also get stuff like in Texas, they require photo ID, and your student ID is not acceptable, but your gun license is.
Oh.
So we have a little comment on the culture there from Texas.
Yeah, which makes a difference because they're predicting which way you're going to vote based on whether you have a gun ID.
Right. So we think that, Bernie Sanders has advocated paper ballots and universal registration, but, you know, it's going to be too little too late. Somebody has to really, really get a plan to focus on this. And the most important thing in 2016 is to make sure that there are exit polls that are done everywhere. Exit polling is extremely accurate if it's done right. And then we have to scrutinize every precinct and every electronic vote count and see how it stacks up with the exit polls. Now, the current way they do it is they take the exit polls, and if the exit polls don't agree with the official electronic vote count, they change the exit polls.
Yeah. You use them in the opposite manner of the purpose they might serve. Harvey Wasserman,
right.
We will have links to all of this information at talknationradio.org. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Well, David, our new book will be The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016, and we look forward to talking with you more about it. You're a great guy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Harvey. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.